is Allison Carter with the Milestones Podcast. This is episode 52, and today we'll be talking about parent and professional dynamics. This is not a cut and dry topic by any means, but I hear a lot of stories from parents about their conversations or relationships with other therapists, teachers, doctors, or any professional who is involved somehow because of their child with special needs. Now, the thing about that is this topic really is not just a special needs issue, but that is the world I live in as an OT, so I will mostly be talking about it in that way. I'm also a parent, and even though my kids don't have special needs, I have dealt with doctors who don't know my background and education and have treated me in ways that I didn't appreciate. That being said, I have dealt with many other doctors that have been extremely professional and respectful. Of course, I want to acknowledge that because I'm not trying to bash on doctors. That's not the point. In fact, today's show is not about doctors specifically, but all medical and educational professionals. The purpose of today's show is not to say one side or the other is somehow wrong or bad, just to point out that both sides need to find a way to communicate effectively with each other, because in the end, we all want to try and make life better for your child. I know if you're a parent, no matter whether your child has special needs or medical issues or not, you have been in a situation at least once in your life where you weren't treated the way you should have been treated by someone in the medical or educational field. I know I can't correct this for everyone, although I would really like to. I would like to bring up some of the issues I've seen and heard about from other parents and therapists. If nothing else, to hopefully acknowledge that there are complicated dynamics going on all the time between parents and professionals, and maybe find ways we can communicate more effectively and respectfully to each other. I know that parents are professionals too. As I said, I'm a parent and I'm also an occupational therapist. So when I'm talking today about parents or professionals, I mean when we are playing each of those roles in life. So even though a parent may be professional in something, I'm referring to them in the times when they are being the parent role. This is a topic that I think is so important to discuss. I may have a unique perspective on this being an early intervention therapist. I would love to hear from you guys on your perspective of this topic also, either as the parent or the professional. But since I work with families in their homes, our relationship often develops into a special one. And I see firsthand what each family is going through and the struggles they face on a day-to-day or even hour-to-hour basis. This is where the unique perspective comes in, I think, because I'm not in an office or a school just hearing the supposed stories from the parents. I am hearing the stories, but I'm also seeing the reality of the stories happen with my own eyes. I can tell you, if you don't have the opportunity to get this perspective yourself, you probably can't fully understand it. I'm there in the home seeing it myself, and I still can't fully understand it because it's not my child going through it, and I don't live it 24/7 like they do. As professionals, we need to listen to parents, not just hear what they say and blow it off or put it on the back burner for later, but actually hear them and listen. Before I go any further with this, let me give you some hypothetical examples of what I'm talking about. Let's say you are a parent of a child with autism, and you're discussing with the professional a situation in which your child had a meltdown when your schedule changed due to whatever happened that day. And the professional, I'm just going to say professional when possible, because I don't want anyone to think that I'm picking on their specific discipline. The professional says that you should try and have a consistent schedule every day, and this will help your child because things will be predictable for them. While this may be good information, you may be thinking, yes, I already know this is the ideal situation. However, every day can't always be exactly the same, even though we try. But even if we keep to the same or predictable schedule, we still get meltdowns, So that's not necessarily the answer. That doesn't tell you what to do in the moment of having the meltdown or what else might have happened to cause the meltdown, since the routine was kept the same as usual that day. I think at this point, so often parents who are going through this just get frustrated with the professional because they feel like they keep throwing suggestions out there that either they've been trying for a long time and they're not working, or the suggestions really aren't relevant to their current situation. This is where a breakdown of communication often happens, because the parent might just listen and not say anything, then end up leaving the appointment and feeling like nothing came of it and that that person still isn't listening to them. And on the other side, the professional person may think they've helped the parent, or they think the parent won't listen to them and won't try any of the ideas they offered. And they won't understand why, because there was not enough or not effective enough communication on either side. I think this is one type of example any parent could relate to. Someone giving you their professional advice or opinion about what you can do or try with your child. As parents, we need to advocate for our kids in a way that is effective. If you aren't getting the kind of advice or support that you need so that you can help your child, then you need to make some changes. First, make sure you are communicating well with your providers. And second, if that's still not working out, you might have to consider finding someone else until you find someone that is the right fit for you. However, I do say this with caution, because there are many parents out there that will move from provider to provider looking for something that isn't there, mainly something that will be a quick and easy fix type solution for their child. There are a lot of strategies in working with kids with special needs that can be helpful immediately in certain situations. However, in all these years, I haven't seen any one thing that quote-unquote fixed a child to where every delay or concern was gone for good. This is hard for parents to hear sometimes and to accept, because there are things that we want to see happen right away. Another point here is that as the parent, you can't say that you tried something and it didn't work for them when you maybe only tried it one time and it didn't go well that time, so you never tried it again. Kids need practice and repetition, just like adults when we are learning something new or something that is difficult for us. So one time is not a real attempt. One time is not repetition and practice. I know there are exceptions to this, like anything else, but as a general rule, trying something one time with a kid is not enough. Depending on the situation, it is more likely that trying something every day for maybe 2 weeks, even if it's one time per day, is a better attempt. One example where I see this happen a lot is with trying to get their child to eat a variety of foods. Let's say the child has sensory processing issues, and it is affecting their ability to tolerate eating different textures and flavors of foods. This, of course, depends on the individual child, but overall, it takes time to change eating habits and develop those skills. There is not a magical solution that will change everything overnight. We all wish there was, but unfortunately, that is rarely the case. But I can understand a parent's frustrations and impatience with wanting this to change sooner rather than later. So the whole point of this example was not really to get into feeding issues, but to discuss how parents might be searching for the quick solution to something that most likely won't be quick to change no matter who you're working with. I don't believe that even the best feeding specialist in the world will be able to change a child's eating habits overnight, especially when they are sensory related, as in this example. And when I say change their eating habits, I mean change them for good so that they don't go back and start being a picky eater again. I know that there are probably parents out there that don't believe this to be true, and this is why they switch therapists and doctors so often. I think that one dynamic that goes into this is that parents are dealing with difficult times on a daily basis and in so many different aspects of their day with their child with special needs. So when therapists are involved, parents want to hear that things will be getting easier now since we are there to help. We need to do a better job of helping parents see that some things may seem harder rather than easier at first, but that's because we'll be working on those skills that they need to work on so that things will be easier at some point. They will need to practice and learn the skills, which is hard for the kids to do and hard for the parents to get them to do because those skills are hard for them. Sometimes it seems like a double-edged sword. The things these kids struggle with are hard for them to do, which is why they struggle with them. Then a lot of times in therapy, we're trying to get them to do those things because they need to practice and practice to get better at them so it will eventually be easier. It seems kind of simple when you think about it, because if something is hard for the child, then that's the thing we need to work on. This is where therapeutic assessment comes in, because we may have to adapt, change, or modify activities to work towards those ultimate goals. We need to make the activities the just right fit, easy enough that they can be successful at them, but hard enough so that they have to try a little, put some effort into it. Going back to the part where I was talking about trying something one time and it didn't work, so they didn't try it again, I've heard the sentence, "Oh, I tried that and it didn't work," so many times. Sometimes when I hear this, I have to consider that the activity or strategy we suggested just isn't one that really works for the parent, or that the parent doesn't see as something they want to try with their child. So they will maybe kind of try it one time, but not expecting anything to come of it. And when it doesn't, as expected, they can say they tried it, but it didn't work. Even though they maybe didn't really try because, for whatever reason they have, it wasn't a good fit for them. It wasn't an appropriate suggestion that their family was going to be able to do. The reason doesn't really matter. The point of it is that we need to help parents find suggestions and activities that is a good fit for their family. Something that is actually interesting to them, or one that they see the potential benefit of trying it. This doesn't just lie in the hands of the therapist or the parents, but in both sides. Back and forth discussion about the possible suggestions will eventually lead you to something that fits with the family and what the child needs to work on, and what the family is willing to do to try and work on that. You will see the most success in these types of situations. The parents will be more likely to incorporate the suggestion into their daily routine if they feel like it is a match with how their family runs. I don't care if you are an OT, physical therapist, speech therapist, doctor, nurse, nutritionist, teacher, or anyone else I may have missed that relates to this topic. You can and should try this with the parents that you work with. Instead of saying, "Okay, why don't you try this and this and this, and I'll check back with you and see how it's going," I find a better approach is to first of all validate what they are saying to you. Let them know that you recognize that they have been trying everything they can think of, and that you see how much they want to help their child. Some good ways to phrase things you say to parents are, "You've probably tried this already, but what about blank? I'm sure you've done this, but I wanted to mention it just in case you haven't thought of it yet." Or, "What kinds of things have you tried for blank, and how did it go? What happened when you tried blank?" These are some examples of ways you can get the back and forth communication going. Validate them by asking what they have tried already, or just by telling them you realize they've probably already tried some of these things, but you're trying to figure out how they went when they tried them so you can help them brainstorm some other possible options for them to try. You may be the expert in your field of work, but the parents are the experts in their home, and they know firsthand how their family dynamics work. They know this better than you. So it is important to recognize that and accept it as professionals. Use that to help them figure out what some options are to try with their kids for whatever the concerns are. We have to take a look at the family system for each particular family, and then take the concepts that we know and understand within our own field of expertise and make them work together somehow. One final point worth mentioning here is that if you are a teacher, therapist, or other medical professional, and a parent is asking you for advice or information on something, and you don't know the answer, it's okay that you don't know the answer. A lot of times people feel like they should be able to answer any questions that parents have about their kids' development or issues related to their special needs or whatever the case might be. And that just realistically isn't always the case. In those cases, it is acceptable and probably preferred that you admit that you might not be the best person to answer that question for them, and if you can, suggest where they might try to turn to find those answers. Or you can take it upon yourself, depending on your relationship with that parent, to say something like, "I'm not exactly sure on that, but I'm happy to ask around to some of my colleagues to see if they might have some ideas for you, if that's okay. And I will let you know what I find out." Or, "I don't know too much about that, but let's see if we can figure it out together." It's also fair and appropriate to simply say something like, "That's not really something I know a lot about, and I wouldn't want to tell you the wrong thing. That sounds like something that a blank person might be able to help you with more than I can." This may not be what the parents are exactly looking for, but it is a better option than making something up and pretending like you know exactly what you're talking about. It doesn't take away from your credibility as a professional to admit that you don't know everything there is to know about everything. One of the things that prompted me to talk about this today was that I read a story in the Autism Parenting magazine recently where a mom wrote in to the magazine and told a story about her son. The story was about Band-Aids. You're probably wondering how Band-Aids could possibly serve as inspiration for my discussion today. Well, if you have a child with sensory issues, or if you work with a child who has sensory issues, you might already know the reasons behind this. But for those of you who don't, you will hopefully learn something new from it. Many of us think back to being a kid, scraping our knees up on the sidewalk, and running inside the house to get a Band-Aid to stop the bleeding. Seems like a pretty normal thing to do when you get a scrape or some type of minor ouchie on your skin. For some kids who have tactile sensory processing issues, putting a Band-Aid on their skin might as well be the same thing as stabbing their skin with a very sharp knife. Of course, the Band-Aid doesn't do what a knife would literally do by stabbing them, but their perception of how the Band-Aid feels on their skin might seem as bad as if there was a knife stuck in their skin. For some kids, you can give their boo-boo a kiss and cover it with a Band-Aid, and the ouchie basically disappears and heals itself immediately as far as they are concerned. But for kids who have sensitivities on their skin, putting a Band-Aid on the ouchie just makes it worse. The problem is that often these kiddos also don't like the way the ouchie looks and feels on their skin, and they want it off too, which of course can't happen until whenever it heals. The family in the article, as with many other families in this world that have dealt with the same exact issue, have tried many different ways to try and bandage up their kids' scrapes and cuts. Some are successful and others not so much. Maybe not even lasting more than 1 second before they rip it off. This is one of those situations where I can't tell you one way will work for them. It is a matter of trial and error and figuring out what works best for your individual child. This family ended up using stickers at one point to get their child to accept having a Band-Aid on for a short amount of time. But he had a particular interest in stickers at that time, so it worked out. Who knows if that continued to work out the next time or if it was a one-time successful event. But the point is, you have to consider what works for you and your child and finding ways to get them involved in the process of solving any situation and using things that are interesting to them will most likely give you the best chance of success. Getting creative is often the name of the game, but getting creative is only part of the game. It also involves knowing why the child is reacting to things the way they are, and what are some possible strategies for working on those things, then catering those strategies to your individual child. If you are a person who has never experienced this situation for yourself, you may have a hard time understanding it, but that is the whole point for today's discussion. Those of us who are professionals trying to support parents of kids with special needs, we may not completely understand everything they are going through, but we can try our best to show them support by listening to them and letting them know that we hear what they are saying by having an open discussion about their concerns and possible solutions for their child. Rather than just throwing out blanket statements like, when they scrape their knee, just put a Band-Aid on it. If they don't like it, just tell them they have to do it so it won't get infected. If you want to read the whole story from that article, I will try and put a link to it in the show notes for today. I'm not sure that's going to work. So if it doesn't end up getting there and you want to read it, send me an email at allison@mymidwesttherapy.com and I can send it to you that way. You can also find this article in a recent issue of the Autism Parenting Magazine. I am an affiliate for that magazine, so you can also find their links to their site in my show notes on every episode of my podcast. In fact, this week, they have a Black Friday sale already going on, and it will continue through the end of Cyber Monday next Monday. If you use the link in my show notes for this episode, you will get the sale price on an annual subscription, plus you will have access to all of the back issues of 2017. That is 24 issues total for $29.88, which is the price of a one-year subscription, so basically 2 years for the price of one. And you get to catch up on all of the issues that you missed this year. It is also on my website if you want to look for it on the homepage there also. Since I am an affiliate for the magazine, I will get a kickback on the percentage of the sale price, similar to what happens with the Amazon links. So it helps me out, but you also get a subscription to a really great magazine. It is geared towards parents of kids with autism, but really there's information that is interesting and helpful for all parents, therapists, teachers, and any person who has an interest in special needs topics. When you subscribe, you will receive links by email where you can go to download the issues. I always save them to my computer so I can easily find them later if I want to. You should check it out if you get a chance. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.